Good afternoon. I got that part right. Here we are in the middle of the season of Eastertide. A few weeks ago, we celebrated Resurrection Sunday, Easter Sunday, when we acknowledge and celebrate Christ's victory over death, the empty tomb. It's a season of joy and life, and we see it all around us in the springtime season as we enjoy flowers sprouting and the trees greening and people out tending to their gardens. It is the season of Eastertide that we are in the Christian calendar. You may or may not know that we at First Baptist Church follow the Revised Standard Lectionary to kind of guide us through the Christian calendar. And we take our selections from the Revised Standard Lectionary to help us through that season, through the calendar, and we follow it throughout the year. I was surprised a little bit to see that right here in the middle of Eastertide, a story from John 13 was our gospel reading for today. Because this story that was just read to us throws us back before the resurrection, before the crucifixion even happened. This is the text from a dark night in Jesus' life. Doesn't seem terribly Eastertide-ish to be thinking about and talking about this particular story today, does it? In my preparation, I actually checked a few times to make sure I was getting the passage right for this week in the lectionary, and sure enough, this is where we are. This is our text for today, John 13, 31 to 35, and we find ourselves in that upper room with Jesus gathered with his disciples about to share a meal, or sharing a meal. Sure enough, during this Eastertide, this is where we find ourselves. Jesus gathered, sharing this meal. Judas is with them, wringing his hands for the betrayal that he was about to bring. The rest of the disciples, likely nervous about what events might unfold after this time with Jesus. Picture them leaning in to hear what Jesus might have to say. There was tension in the air. There were things were brewing. And the cross was looming at that time. Jesus speaks some final words to them. And as we reflect on those words, maybe the lectionary selection during this Eastertide season will come to make sense to us. So an overview of the scene. There is just so much happening at this point in the story of Jesus. There they are in that upper room. The cross is right there, ready for Jesus to die upon. And I wonder how Jesus must have felt, gathered like that with his disciples, knowing full well he was about to be betrayed by one of them who was right there. He was about to be denied by another one who was sitting right there. And he was about to be abandoned by all the rest. This, in addition to knowing the suffering and death that he would soon be facing, I wonder how Jesus must have felt in this story. It strikes me as somewhat of a miracle that in this scene, Jesus doesn't flee in fear, run off, and escape what's about to happen. He doesn't lecture them or lecture Judas or all the others. He doesn't retaliate. He doesn't lash out in anger. He doesn't cower away and play the victim role. How was Jesus feeling? I wonder. John 13:1, the very start of this chapter, there's a verse that tells us that he knows that he'll be leaving his disciples soon, and he loved them to the very end. He loved them. He comes across in this story as they're gathered and sharing this meal together. He comes across as resolute in this scene, purposeful, prepared, with intent about what he's about to do with them and say to them. As Frederick Buechner puts it, with wine on his breath and crumbs in his beard and his heart in his mouth, he offers final acts and words to his disciples. The story goes that he rises from the table, wraps a towel around himself, bends down low, and one by one, in the humble position of a servant, he washes all their feet. And he declares, in the midst of pending betrayal and denial and abandonment, that the wheels are now in motion. The betrayal is taking place. God's glory is going to be revealed in his death and resurrection. Jesus shares a meal. He washes their feet. He addresses Judas in what he's about to do to betray Jesus. He addresses Peter that he will be denying ever knowing him. And then he imparts these significant words that were read this morning. Verse 34 and 35, I give you a new commandment, that you love one another just as I have loved you. You also should love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. This afternoon, I was about to say this morning, but I caught myself. This afternoon, I'd like to, if I may, explore just two of the smallest words in these two verses. And the first one is the word new. New. A new commandment I give you. New? The command to love one another, a new command? God's people for generations would have heard this command over and over and over again. Leviticus 19, way back in the Old Testament, outlining the Mosaic law, was clear. Love your neighbor as yourself. Love one another. This was not a new command. New? This was a foundational command in Mosaic law. It undergirded so much else that they practiced. Not a new command, surely. Well, except maybe in two ways, I'll suggest. New, maybe, because Jesus was saying it, and Jesus was renewing it. In a sense of freshness and life, as though Jesus was taking the big book of loving one another off the bookshelf, blowing the dust off of it, and breathing a fresh new spirit into it. It's as though this commandment to love one another had become perhaps old, tired, worn out, burdensome for God's people. And Jesus here expresses it with a newness and a vitality and an importance that exposes the beauty of the command to love one another. So maybe new because Jesus is saying it and he's restoring it. Or maybe this analogy, if you picture a scuffed up, weathered, abandoned antique vase being picked up and attended to by a master craftsperson and restoring it lovingly to its beautiful original condition to the point where it seems brand new again. And those who gaze upon it can marvel at its beauty. This command to love one another is new in that sense. Also new because God's people had not yet heard this command in connection with Jesus' following phrase, love one another just as I have loved you. Just as I have loved you, which leads to the second little word in these verses. I'd like to explore the word as. Preacher Scott Hayes writes beautifully about this word as in this text. The word as I have loved you. I like what he says. He says this. Jesus uses the word as, according to Dale Bruner, not merely meaning an imitation of Christ's love, but that their hearts actually welled up from the overflow of Christ's actual love. That the love of Christ be actually in you. That if you're going to live off of its riches, that it be present in you. This love, he says, is so novel, so powerful, so utterly mind-blowing that it is not something you could ever concoct on your own. It has to be given to you as a gift. First Baptist Church, have you considered this, that Christ's actual love dwells among us, his people, that it's real and present here and now, and it is life-changing, that we don't just do our best to love one another and strive all on our own to love, but that we only love one another because Christ's love is with us, and it is overflowing to the point where we just love one another as I have loved you. There's just such an intimacy between those. Love one another as I have loved you. Dorothy Day wrote this, "We must practice the presence of God." He said, where two or three are gathered, there he is in the midst of them. He is with us in our kitchens, at our tables, in our bread lines, with our visitors, in our homes, on our farms. When we pray for our material needs, it brings us close to his humanity. He too needed food, shelter. He too warmed his hands by a fire and laid down in a boat to go to sleep. It's Christ actually with us, his love real among us. And so no wonder people will come to know Christ when they see our love, because it's his love with us flowing out to each other, not just to each other also, but to our neighbors, to strangers, to our enemies even, and to the furthest corners of wherever our lives take us. May Christ's love fill us, First Baptist Church, to overflowing. More from Dorothy Day. Love and ever more love, she says, is the only solution to every problem that comes up. Well, how's that for a statement? If we love each other enough, we will bear with each other's faults and burdens. If we love enough, We are going to light a fire in the hearts of others, and it is love that will burn out the sins and hatreds that sadden us. It is love that will make us want to do great things for each other. No sacrifice will then seem too much. Love. New command. To love one another as I have loved you. I've heard it suggested that perhaps this time in that upper room when Jesus imparts these words, perhaps this was actually the start of the church, or a very strong foreshadowing. Before Pentecost, before the ascension, before the resurrection, before the crucifixion even, Jesus spoke these words, instructing that his love would be with us, to love one another, a description of the church, people that love one another. Essayist Debbie Thomas said it this way, our love for each other is how the world will see, taste, touch, hear, and find Jesus. It's through our love that we will embody Jesus and make Jesus relatable and possible and plausible to a dying world. Folks, be assured, if Christ loved and washed the feet of the very ones that would betray him and deny him and abandon him in his darkest hour, surely his love is with us in our community and communities like ours around the world. As he has loved us, so too we are able to love one another. Be assured, Christ's love is real and present in and through us today. So no wonder the lectionary for this Eastertide Sunday reconnects us with that story that takes place just before Good Friday, you know, during Eastertide, because they are words of description of Christ's love alive with us as a church today. You know, there is no resurrection without the crucifixion. And so we think upon this story and we do well to remember the darkness against which the light of Eastertide shines all the more brightly. I'd like to just close with a prayer by Thomas Merton that speaks to this theme of Christ's love being actually with us. So you can bow your heads. This prayer is by Thomas Merton, titled, O God, we are one with you. O God, we are one with you. Love has overcome. Love is victorious. O God, we are one with you. You have made us one with you. You have taught us that if we are open to one another, you dwell in us. Help us to preserve this openness and to fight for it with all our hearts. Help us to realize that there can be no understanding where there is mutual rejection. O God, in accepting one another wholeheartedly, fully, completely, we accept you. We thank you. We adore you. And we love you with our whole being, because our being is in your being. Our spirit is rooted in your spirit. Fill us then with love, and let us be bound together with love as we go our diverse ways, united in this one spirit, which makes you present in the world, which makes you witness to the ultimate reality that is love. Amen.